Okay, good morning, everyone. I want to remind and encourage everybody to join us for our Shavuos learning programming. There's a lot going on. I think we have over 25 learning opportunities. I'm not expecting that you're going to go to the 0 to 5, you know, story time outside with Dovi Grosser, but there's a tremendous amount of learning opportunities, both at night and during both days. During the first day, we have about 3 to 4 hours shiurim straight in the afternoon. A really great, stellar lineup of individuals from our community. And on the second day, we added one more shiur with several Divrei Torah also at the barbecue as well, to really take advantage of the opportunities we have to be mekabel the Torah on Shavuos. Which brings us to Bamidbar. Special opportunity. We're beginning Bamidbar right before Shavuos. That's not by accident. That is intentional. Through the words of Chazal and in the Gemara in Maseches Megillah, they explain that we have a halacha that before the year begins, we need to say and lay the klalos, the curses. That was last week in Bechukosai. And then Tosfos in Maseches Megillah writes, we don't go. There's a concept called Tich Lashana V'Kilosef. You have to end the year in its curses and begin the new year with its blessings. So we look at the new year. The new year is Tishrei. So in Tishrei, we do this. Before Tishrei, before Rosh Hashanah, we always lay in Kitavo and Nitzavim. Nitzavim has some of the curses in it. And then we go into the new year. The truth is, there's always a buffer. Nitzavim, Vayelach, is always before Rosh Hashanah, because you shouldn't go straight from the Kalos into Rosh Hashanah. Chazal say, the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah tells us that Shavuos is also a type of Rosh Hashanah, and therefore Bechukosai always falls out before Shavuos. That's why there's all this gymnastics with the double parashas, single parashas, which it's so confusing. I gave, it wasn't a drasha, it was in the drasha slot about 3 weeks ago. It was like a mini shiur on explaining why there's a major discrepancy between Eretz Israel and America for the next bunch of weeks. And the Mabit writes that this is the way that we got it right. We don't always get it right, but Bechukosai is 2 Shabbos and before Shavuos. Then you have Bamidbar, and then you go into Shavuos. Sometimes in America, it works out where you have Naso also. This year in Israel, they have Naso as well. But the ideal way, the ideal minhag, is to have the Chukosai, Bamidbar, into Shavuos, where it's a little bit of a buffer. If there's too much of a buffer, then you don't notice this halacha. That's what the Bali Tosas write, that if you have 2 parashios before. So it's intentional, Rav Druk writes, that Bamidbar also needs to be before Shavuos. Right? So what is unique about Bamidbar that puts it before Shavuos? So I want to share the following thought from Rav Druk. He says that the Torah was given in 3 ways. The Torah was given, Chazal say, be'esh, b'mayim, u'bamidbar. Where the Torah is compared to 3 things.
What was the third one?
Midbar. It was desert. Esh, mayim, and midbar.
Midbar.
Midbar. Okay. That the Torah was given through fire, through water, and in the desert. Okay? So, Vayidaber Hashem, Moshe b'midbar Sinai, b'omoed, achad chodesh hasheni, reminds us that the Torah was given in the midbar. Now, what does this mean? Asked Rav Druk, what does this mean that the Torah was given to in these 3 places, in 3 ways? And the Torah is also compared to Esh, Mayim, and Midbar. What does this mean? So I want to share 2 approaches. The first is from Rameir Shapiro. Rameir Shapiro was zochet to be in his yeshiva 2 weeks ago in Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. And in his sefer, Imrei Das, Al HaTorah, he says the following very nice idea. He says all 3 of these represent different types of sacrifice the Jewish people went through throughout their history. First and foremost, Avram Avinu. What was the first test that Avram Avinu went through? Kivshan Haish, right? He went through a personal Nisayon wasn't in the most famous story that's not in the Torah, that we think is in the Torah. He went through Kivshan Ha'esh, and emerging from, first going through and emerging from Kivshan Ha'esh, he's no longer Avram. He's Avraham Avinu. Secondly, the Jewish people went through an Isayon of water. Where was that? Kriyas Yamsuf, great. Kriyas Yamsuf, 2 for 2, very good. 2 for 2. The Jewish people went through Kriyas Yamsuf. Again, a threat to the nation. What should we do? Should we go back to Mitzrayim? Should we go through the water? That's number 2. And number 3, the Midbar. So he said, what's the Midbar? The fact that we left Egypt and we went into a Midbar without any food, money, any support at all, and we just said complete bitachon to Hashem, is within itself a test. Lech teich acharai b'midbar b'eretz lo zeruah. As the Navi Yirmiyahu writes, Haftorah for the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So he says that these three types of ways the Torah was given represent that the Torah, if we want to be part of the Torah, we need to give up of ourselves. There needs to be a certain level of Mesiras Nefesh. There are certain things that we, if one wants to be learning Torah, one wants to be living a life of Torah, as true, I think, with anything in life, that means that there's going to be things that one will give up to live a life of Torah. Avraham did that on a personal level, right, individual level, and the Jewish people did that on a national level in 2 different ways, into the Midbar, And through the Yamsin. Yeah, Yassin. A month? What do you mean a month of food? So they definitely took food. They definitely took, you're right, they took money. But they know where, you're right, they took money. But I don't know where they... they didn't know the month was going to happen. The month started on, no, it wasn't right away. It was Parshat B'Shalach. So it was after the Yamsuf. It was after the Yamsuf, a few days after, whenever that was. Some argue is Lag BaOmer, which is what day in Iyar? About a month, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I got it.
Oh, yeah. The Chasim Sofer has a piece on it. He argues that's what it was.
They thought they were going to Israel straight, so it wouldn't have taken more than that month to get there.
So you're saying it's not such a challenge to right. go into the okay?
Yeah, it turned out to be a challenge because of circumstances.
Right.
But when they left,
right,
it didn't seem like a big deal.
Right.
But it was an unknown. Going into this vast place, it was an unknown.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the way the Navi Yirmiyahu expresses it, that it was going into a vast unknown. Even if they had certain levels of support, it's going into a vast unknown.
You didn't know what was going to happen next. You didn't know what was going to happen next.
Well, right.
Who would have been at the
Yeah. So I have a greater appreciation just going to Poland last week for what people went through when they went to a new land. You're right, they were running away from horrors in Europe, but to start over in a brand new country with a new language and new culture is something that is so, so, so difficult to do. And to tell a whole nation, leave Egypt, right? You've been there for over 200 years, right? Leave Poland, 700 years, 1,000 years, the Jewish people are there. And go into, you know, that within itself is so hard to do. It's so hard to do. So that is the approach of the Imre
Dabas. Rabbi,
the approach
of
the
how many grades are there?
Yes. Somebody just, is making
yeah,
coffee.
Yeah, yeah, just on a personal side, my mother-in-law, may she rest in peace, left on the last plane out of Germany. Her whole family went to Auschwitz. She was 18 years old.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. Yeah.
And went.
Left. 600,000 men. It's probably more. 600,000 men. So probably people say 2 to 3 million. 2 to 3 million people left.
How many people stay? I didn't leave.
So that is a. It's a, 4 to 5 million, some say 15 to 20, died. Didn't stay. They died. They died in Nova Scotia. Didn't stay. They were, you know, they didn't make it. They didn't make it out. The second approach is from the Ksav Sofer, Eish Mayim and Midbar. He says that these represent three attributes that one needs to have in order to be, you know, to be somebody that's Makabel the Torah. Number one is Mayim. Mayim is something that is an element of the war of the world that always goes down, right? Always goes down, which represents anivas. The Gemara Tainus writes, "Lama nimshlo divrei Torah l'mayim." Torah is compared to water. Ma mayim yordim imakum gavoa l'makum namuch. It automatically goes down. So too, Torah is received to be receptacle of Torah. One needs to be humble. Needs to be somebody that has humility. That is Moshe Rabbeinu, for example, is the greatest. Anabi called Adam. He was the greatest receptacle for Torah. If one wants to be a kli, my daughter wants me to take her to the Container Store. Remember to the Container Store? She saw it. She's like, oh my gosh, she's very organized. One of my kids is very organized. She's like, it's a dream. It's like, forget about Toys R Us, which is Allah Shalom. You know, she's like the Container Store, right? So to be a container of Torah, one needs to have anivas. That needs to be there. It's not about me, right? It's about us. It's about we, Rabbi Sachs would say. It's not about me, it's about we. It's not about my skills. It's about what I can give to the world. The second is Eish. Eish is the opposite of Mayim in many ways. One of them is water goes down. Eish goes up, right? It always goes up. And I always think about this when I'm staring at the Hanukkah candles. And they always, you know, they're always flickering up. And that represents the passion that somebody has. In Judaism, we need passion to ignite that flame, to be excited about what we do. It's not just another Shabbos meal. It's not just another 3-day yontif. Oh, we're just going to go through the motions to get through it. Eish das lamo. The Torah itself is a living thing. And it's our life, literally. And it's the passion that can get us connected to Torah. And the third is the Midbar. The Midbar, we alluded to this a second ago, the Midbar is bitachon. Midbar is, you know, relying on Hashem as our guide in keeping the Torah. Sometimes it's not easy to follow a certain halacha, a certain mitzvah. Maybe it's not cool. Maybe it's not comfortable with the people you're around. Maybe it's not something that, you know, fits with everything else, the culture that we live in. But you need a certain level of bitachon, of midbar, to have that. So to be somebody that's mekabel the Torah, these are three attributes: anivas, humility, passion, and bitachon, reliance on a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Ksav Sofer. The Ksav Sofer. So Rav Druk adds to this something very, very beautiful. He says, if you think about it, these elements are mutually exclusive. You can't have fire, water, and midbar in the same place. You can't have fire and water in the same place. It's impossible. Right? That's simply not possible. Bara, maybe that was the only time in history where we had Eish and Mayim together. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. It can't exist. They can't coexist. Fire and midbar work well together. But water and midbar do not work well together. Usually the definition of a midbar is something that is bereft of mayim. So by definition, right, all three can't be together in the same place, in the same location. So he says what this Rav Druk points to us is that we need everybody to mekabel the Torah together. Not each person can be perfect on their own. You could only achieve perfection, right, of Torah, if we're all working together on all cylinders, right? It's, you know, you could think of every sports analogy ever, right? You need every person on the team to be playing well in order for the team to play well. If one person is not doing well, it doesn't work. The pitcher can be a great pitcher, but the catcher can't catch. Forget about it. It's all over. You have, you know, wild pitch after wild pitch. It's not going to work, et cetera, et cetera. So he says, when it comes to Klal Yisrael, we need all three, but that all three is by having everybody together. And this should give us chizuk. He quotes the Rambam. The Rambam is a beautiful Rambam at the end of Hilchos Talmud Torah. Some people have the minhag, very nice minhag, to learn a chapter of Hilchos Talmud Torah at the table over the meals on Shavuos. Very nice minhag. And Shavuos, add a little bit more Torah to your table. I'm sure everybody has and shares divrei Torah, but Shavuos is different. So you can start early, you can start in Shabbos, and to ensure that you have this notion. So he quotes the Rambam. The Rambam writes, the Shlosha Ksarim Nichtur Yisrael. Jewish people were given three crowns. Keser Torah. This is, again, similar language to the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Keser Torah, Keser Kahuna, and Keser Malchus. Three different crowns. Torah, priesthood, and kingship. Keser Kahuna Zacha Bo'am. Kahuna, sorry. Okay? If you're a Yisrael, sorry, buddy. Like, it's not going to work. Right? That only goes to the Kohan. Keser Malchus only goes to the children, progeny of David HaMelech. Keser Torah, Munach V'Omeid U'Mucham L'Kol Yisrael. Keser Torah is there and prepared for anybody and everybody. Shneamar, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, Morah Shaki Hilas Yaakov. Kol Misha Yirtze, Yavo V'Yitol. Anybody that can go ahead and take this part of Torah. And that is reflected in this notion, Eish Mayim Midbar. You can't have all three. Everybody can find their own personal chelak in the Torah itself. The same chelkenu b'sora secha. That is what Rav Druk adds to the beautiful ksav sofer, that each person has their own chelak, and that is there and prepared for them on their own. That is idea, say, number one, maybe one, two. Okay. Second thought comes also from Rav Druk, but we'll see. Here he quotes somebody else, really nice. So, Ve'elo todos Aaron u'Moshe, b'yom diber Hashem es Moshe b'har Sinai. Chapter 3 begins with the following pasuk. Ve'elo todos Aaron u'Moshe, b'yom diber Hashem es Moshe b'har Sinai. These are the generations of Moshe and Aaron and Moshe. Again, here Aaron first, sometimes Moshe's first. So you tell me what's wrong with the next pasuk. Ve'elo shmos b'nei Aaron, ha'bachor Nadav v'Avihu, Elazar v'Tamar. Right? These are the children of Aaron. So we're Moshe's children. So Rashi says, ve'eno maskir ela b'nei Aaron. You only mention the children of Aaron. Vinikru todos Moshe. Why are they called the todos of Moshe? Lefisha lamdan Torah. Because Moshe taught them Torah. Melame shekol hamelamed is ben chader Torah. Malo lavakas of kilo yodon. You learn from here that anybody that teaches a child Torah, it's as if they raised them. It's as if they raised them. So, and that is a beautiful thought. It's the end of the school year. Teachers, we have to have a tremendous amount of respect for teachers and for them teaching us, teaching our children Torah. It's not a question. What they sacrifice, what they give up to choose the profession to be teaching the next generation and getting kids excited for Torah is something that we cannot be forgotten on our generation. It's not a question. But I want, yeah.
It's an obligation. Teach his child. So if he gives that obligation over to a rabbi,
yeah,
the rabbi is doing what the father should.
So you're saying that's the mechanics. That's how it works. Because it's the father, and if the father doesn't do it, then it goes over. Okay?
The rabbi is taking the role of the father.
Yeah.
It's similar to a bris also. Is it the obligation is also on the father to do?
The obligation of the father, and then the Gemara says there's like three levels. Yeah. And it goes to then it eventually goes to Kol Yisrael. Tzipora gave the bris milah. It could be that it works the same way. I want to direct you to the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Or HaChaim says something very, very beautiful. He says a different answer than Rashi. How are these children of Aaron considered the children of Moshe? He says that after the pasuk is the following: Uba Aaron his anaf Hashem lahashmido. Hashem was very angry with Aaron after Chet Egel. It's pasuk in Devarim. Doesn't say this in the Chet Egel story itself. Lahashmido, to destroy Aaron. So what does that mean? Chazal say that initially Hashem wanted to kill, right? Part of the Chet Ego would be that Aaron would lose two of his sons there, Elazar and Tamar, and he would also lose Nadav Avihu a little bit later. What happens? Moshe davened. Moshe saying in the verb that I davened that you wouldn't lose Elazar and Vitamar. Shehoil, Shehoilat Filoso, Lahatzil, Elazar Vitamar. Rashi says this also elsewhere. Rashi says that in the end of the story of Har Sinai, it says that there are certain people that saw Hashem and Hashem didn't touch them. So Rashi points out that it was the children of Aaron behaving inappropriately. They were like eating and drinking while experiencing the Matan Torah experience. It was inappropriate. And Hashem wanted to do something then. He didn't want to share the simcha of Matan Torah, so he waited. You can definitely ask the question, what about the simcha of the Chanukah Samishkan? Okay, it's a good question. I don't have an answer to that question. But he waited. So you see there, Moshe is saying, Moshe davened Hashem, not to kill all of Aaron's kids. So the Yom Diber Hashem. So you see here, the Or Chaim wants to express that how are these Aaron's, that these are also Moshe's children? Moshe davened for the kids. And davening, right? Davening for somebody else to have children, we're here to perpetuate, to keep the kids. That within itself, the Torah is recognizing, is like you raised them, is like you had them. It's a beautiful thought. There are so many people that struggle with infertility, struggle with having children. Sometimes it's giving them chizuk, but I think a lot of us struggle with like what to say and how to say it, etc. To daven for them is the greatest bracha you can give them. Yeah.
Like we also say also that Torah says it this way. Like we learned in Shoftim about the grandchild of Moshe Rabbeinu. It seems that maybe his family went a little bit astray. And since he did daven for Aaron's children, maybe this was like kind of his adopted family. Because his family might have gone maybe in a little bit of the wrong direction.
So you're saying this is more of like, off of Shoftim, where we learn Pesel Micha, that the Levi was a grandchild of Moshe. Maybe this is like sort of saying Moshe.
Moshe also, what he did, this is like his children.
Right. Don't only look at your, right. That's not going to end well. There's a Ksav Sofer elsewhere that writes that Rashi says that Moshe was jealous of the way that Aaron died. Aaron died by Misas Nashika, which is apparently like the least painful death, closest to God. Also, Miriam died that way also. And Moshe wanted that. He was Misave. He desired the death of Aaron. So the Ksav Sofer says homiletically, it wasn't literally the death of Aaron that he wanted. He wanted a Nachas. He wanted the Nachas of the next generation. Aaron got that. Aaron, but not everybody can get that fully, completely, or at all. And he wanted to show him, listen, look what you did. Look what you did for Klal Yisrael. Like, not everybody, it's not your fault. It's not your fault what happened. You know, that's a different shear. It's a different shear about that. But look what else you accomplished. Lubavitcher Rebbe, they say, well, didn't have any children. Right? Two Gedolim in the three generations didn't have any children. Chazon Ish and Lubavitcher Rebbe. Look how many children are named Menachem Mendel, right? Look how many children, what's the Rebbe's wife's name? Forgetting right now. What? Chaim Ushka, right? And okay, it's not a competition. I don't have any. There are many children in Avraham Yishayahu also. Eftel Chazon Ish as well. That you can. We don't have answers to all the questions as to why, but we do see that their progeny does live on in a different, right? Not biological, but definitely. Their nachas is through all the Talmidim that they've amassed throughout the generations. Yeah.
I believe the Japanese, they have a thing of, if you save somebody's life, you're responsible for them.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. So it could be a takeoff of this, you know, Moshe saved Aaron's kids' lives. So since he's responsible for them, he's like their father.
He saved their lives. Oh, very nice. So adding to this Orach Chaim, he saved their lives, therefore he's responsible for them. Very nice. What is that? Okay, we have to look into that Japanese custom. Okay. Okay, very good. Iksav Kabbalah. So we begin. Bamidbar is called the nickname. Every sefer has a nickname. The nickname for Sefer Bamidbar is Chumash HaPikudim. Why Pikudim? Because there are two counts. It's a lot of tragic stories that happen, or fascinating, you know, very rich stories of Mravlin, Korach, Chetnei Meriva. There's so much to unpack, and we will, Bezrat Hashem, unpack those narratives throughout Bamidbar. But within all those stories, there's two countings, Bamidbar and in Parshas Pinchas is another count. So the nickname is Chumash HaPikudim. So the way this is expressed many times over, the psukim express the counting is the following: Utzvao ufkudehem. You have two languages. Ela pekude bnei Yisrael lebeis avosam kol pekudei hamachanos litziv osam. Simply put, why do we count? Why are we counting people right now? What was the plan? To go into Eretz Yisrael. Once you get there to Israel, you need an army. So we're counting men that are able-bodied to fight in the war. Right? And this is a, by the way, this is the custom that is still Arayom Hazeh. Right? If you can age out of the army, right? It's only a certain age range that can go into the army. Now, what's this language? Pikudav, pikudehem, utzvaav. What is utzvaav adding? So the simple understanding of utzvaav is it's referring to the legions, meaning I am an individual, right? I am counted on my own. But I'm also part of a group, whether that's there's all these different languages for different types of groups, a base, a unit, a troop, but what, you know, there's all different types of languages within the army about how to express this. The fact, just to add to this, we are called two different ways, right? We're counted as Mispar and Shem. Mispar Shemot is brought up. Or Pincus points out something very, very beautiful. Mispar and Shemot also is two opposites. Mispar, you're a number, and you're a name. A number is anonymous. You're just a number, right? Nazis, you're just a number. A Shem gives you value. This is who I am. I'm unique. So sometimes, right, we need to show off our individuality. That needs to be prominent in who we are as part of Klal Yisrael. And every single person is unique on their own. But we also need to be a mispar. You can't have one and the other. One without the other is dangerous. But to be a mispar also, you need to fall in line. Certain things that we code of conduct, that you fall in line with all fights. The Ksav Kabbalah says, what's added here with the word utzvaav? He says something very, very beautiful. He says that here, utzvaav refers to the family members of the person that's going out to war. Right? Right? It's not just the person that's going out to war. That person has a mother that's thinking about them, and a father that's also thinking about them. Probably not as much as the mother, but is davening for them, that they're safe. Has a wife and children that they need to come back to, Be'ezrat Hashem. That the Torah is recognizing that when one person goes out to war, that person represents so much more. That it's, and there's a sacrifice that is given up, not by that just one person, but really by the entire family unit. Upekudehem utzvaav is recognizing when one person's going, they're representing so many more people. Not just Am Yisrael, but there's so many people that care for them that are going as well. Chazal say that when David HaMelech fought wars, the amount of people that fought in the war, there'd also be that many people learning in the Beis Medrash at the time of the war. Why was that? Because you needed one for one. I think a few years ago, there was an, I think with, it was 2014, when we had the war in the summer, there was an organization that began that every person you could sign up online and you get an email with a name, a Hebrew name of somebody to daven for, right? That you had, there was a chayal there and you're somewhere else, you're responsible to no one else got that name. And you daven for them while they were stationed away from their family. And the Torah is recognizing the sacrifice of the entire family when going out to war. At the end of the parsha, this is the last thought for today. At the end of the parsha, we recognize the jobs of the Levium and what they need to carry. There's an article by a woman named Devorah Ushpizai. Okay, I saw this article a few years ago, where she does her research and her homework on the weight of how much of the Aron weigh. You know, based on the amount of gold that needed to be put into it. There are two layers of gold in the Aron plus wood in the middle. And the Aron and the Luchos were inside of the Aron, etc. And the Luchos Shenios were also in the Aron. She argues that it was nearly impossible for somebody to carry, or a few people to carry the Aron. And in fact, we didn't carry the Aron, right? The Aron had two poles that you couldn't remove from it. It was usher to remove them. And you had to, you know, technically pick up the poles and carry them. Just based on the weight of the Aron itself with the gold and the luchos, etc., that would be impossible to do. Impossible. The weight of the inside would break the poles. So she says, she notes, that this idea is consistent with an idea in the Medrash. The Medrash writes that the Aron, the people didn't carry the Aron, but the Aron was Nosei Es Nosaf. The Aron carried the people that carried it. And this fits, right? It's great when it fits so nicely. That what this message really is sharing with us is that when we are involved in Torah learning itself, we are not carrying the Torah, but the Torah is carrying us. You can argue that in Simchas Torah, maybe we're holding the Torah, we're carrying the Torah. On Shavuos, the Dvar Mitzvah is for the Torah to carry us by engaging in serious Talmud Torah and learning Torah throughout the Yontif. The Torah itself is carrying us. And I'll just add with the words of the Levush. The Levush writes, there's a big discussion about what the nature of Birchas HaTorah is. Right, the one Bar Mitzvah boy that got very excited because he said, hey, I'm going to stay up all night, but I can't stay up all night. So I'm probably going to take a nap at some point. He asked me already, can I be the guy that says Birchas HaTorah for the whole shul? You know, he said, can I be that person? Because last year I slept also, but I couldn't do it because I wasn't Bar Mitzvah. So excited. So special. So what is the nature of Birchas HaTorah? So he says, is it a Birchas HaMitzvah? What is it? Is it a special mitzvah, Birchas HaShevach, on the Torah itself? So the Levush writes that it's a Birchas HaNehenin. It's a bracha on the enjoyment of Torah. And it's a haftacha, usually, right? You make the bracha, eat the apple, right? So we're making the bracha because we're showing how much we enjoy. The Harevna, Hashem Elokeinu, that we love the Torah. The Torah gives us so much enjoyment. Here, he says that sometimes you have a mitzvah and sometimes you have hana. He says here, Hacha ha-mitzvah v'hana'a chada milsa hi. It's one thing. And that's why the Torah, that's why Chazal said, there's many brachos that we make over it. B'chol boker, we make two brachos. K'deshe achas nechshev is the bracha achrona, alima shalamad etmo. He says something very, very beautiful. He says the first bracha, you make two brachas in the morning, really three, but probably one is one, it's probably one and then one, two A, two B. He says one of the brachas you make in the morning is a bracha achrona on the Torah you learned yesterday. And then you make a bracha rishona for the Torah that you're eating, consuming, you know, today. It's a very beautiful thought, right? If it's really a bracha, a bracha senenin, the bracha rishona, and followed by a bracha achron. So today we learned several thoughts on Parsha Bamidbar and also on Shavuos. We began by talking about the Torah is compared to and also given in three ways. Be'esh b'torah b'mayim. We learned the idea from Rabbi Shapiro, his approach, and then we learned the approach of the Ksav Sofer as to what he felt was this anivas humility and passion and bitachon and what that meant for us. Not each person can get half all three. We learned Elo Todos Moshe the Aaron, and it only mentioned the Aaron's children. A beautiful thought from the Or Chaim, a beautiful thought from Yossi Reiman on what that meant as well. And then we move forward to Utzva'av Upekudav. What did that double language mean? It's a family affair when somebody goes out to war. The Torah is recognizing the weight that a family carries when somebody goes out to war. And then we discussed literally the carrying of the Aron and what that meant for literally physically couldn't be carried. Aron Nosei is Noseh. When we learn Torah, the Torah carries us. Maybe that's what's the difference between Shavuos and Simchas Torah. And we connect that to the beautiful Levush about Birchas Hananim on Birchas Torah. Wish everybody a wonderful Yontif and a special Zman Matan Torah. Say, have a great Yontif.
Have a great Yontif, Rabbi.